So Prabhu's, we continue with the third canto, and we're on the third chapter now, verses here 25 and 26. So 25 is not on the board, but 26 is. So I'll just recite 25 first. This is the third chapter of the third canto, chapter entitled The Lord, the Lord's Pastimes Out of Vrindavan. 25 is, in the translation is, a few months passed, and then, bewildered by Krishna, all the descendants of Vrishni, Bhoj, and Andhaka, who were incarnations of the demigods, went to Prabhas. While those who were eternal devotees of the Lord did not leave, but remained in Dwarka. And then 26, translation. After arriving there, all of them took bath, and with the water of this place of pilgrimage, they offered their respects to the forefathers, demigods and great sages, and thus satisfied them. They gave cows to the brahmanas in royal charity. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Amongst the devotees of the Lord, there are several divisions. Mainly Nitya Siddhas and Sadhana Siddhas. The Nitya Siddha devotees never fall down to the region of the material atmosphere, even though they sometimes come onto the material plane to execute the mission of the Lord. The Sadhana Siddha devotees are chosen from the conditioned souls. Out of the Sadhana devotees, there are mixed and pure devotees. The mixed devotees are sometimes enthusiastic about fruitive activities and are habituated to philosophical speculation. The pure devotees are free from all these mixtures and are certainly absorbed in the service of the Lord, regardless of how and where they are situated. Pure devotees of the Lord are not enthusiastic to put aside their service to the Lord in order to go visit holy places of pilgrimage. A great devotee of the Lord in modern times, Sri Narottam Das Thakur, modern times, has sung like this: To visit holy places of pilgrimage is another bewilderment of the mind, because devotional service to the Lord at any place is the last word in spiritual perfection. For pure devotees of the Lord who are completely satisfied with the transcendental loving service of the Lord, there is hardly any necessity to visit the various places of pilgrimage. Wow. But those who are not so advanced have the prescribed duties of visiting pilgrimage sites and regularly performing the rituals. The part of the princely order of the Yadu dynasty who went to Prabhas performed all duties to be done in a place of pilgrimage and offered their pious actions to their forefathers and others. As a rule, every human being is indebted to God, the demigods, great sages, other living entities, people in general, forefathers, etc., for various contributions received from them. Thus, everyone is obliged to repay the debt of gratitude. The Yadus went to the Prabhas pilgrimage site, performed their duties by distributing land, gold, and well-nourished cows in royal charity, as described in the following verse. The translation once again, kindly do repeat. After arriving there, all of them took bath, and with the water of this place of pilgrimage, they offered their respects to the forefathers, demigods and great sages, and thus satisfied them. They gave cows to the Brahmanas in royal charity. Jai Om Gyanati Minandasya Gyananjana Shilaka Chakshuran Militam Yaina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastarya Bhutala Shri Mate Bhakti Charu Swami Tinamine Shringaja Chaitaha Shrupanaita Vagdinam Chara Suputam Prabhupada Gata Prana Naimi Bhakti Charupadam Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastarya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunjivadi Paschaste Satarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaura Bhakta Prinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Bancha, Kalpatrubhascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayavacha, Patitanam Bhavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo, Namo Namaha, Vaishnavebhyo, Namo Namaha. Prabhus, I seek the blessings and mercy of all the assembled and unassembled devotees, so that I may say something of significance and something meaningful. This is one of my kind of favorite chapters in the third canto, because there's pastimes. I like a bit of pastime as opposed to the philosophy. And third canto, nice, better than the first. But the third canto, the entire third canto, consists of two parts. And has a total of 33 chapters. And in essence, there are five themes. The first part begins with Krishna Leela, which then follows into the creation and concludes with the Varaha Roop Leela. And then the second part begins with Kadarma and Devahuti, which is the fourth theme. And the fifth theme is the final one, is again it's Kapila and Devahuti. So these are like the five themes to it. The first chapter of this canto is when Vidura advises Dhritarashtra. It was good advice. To give up his parental affection for Duryodhana. I mean, those who have sons, it's a difficult thing to do. Even if the sons somewhat do their own thing and don't listen, doesn't matter, beta, you just carry on, you know. Do what you want in life. Now, to give up that affection for Dhritarashtra, impossible. With such a son like Duryodhana, who is so very determined, you know, he can persuade anyone. So how can he? It's such a difficult thing to do. But, however, we do know that, you know, Dhritarashtra was truly blessed because, ultimately, because of Vidura. Vidura pulls him out of everything. And, of course, unfortunately, Vidura is insulted by Kali personified Duryodhan. And Vidura takes this as a blessing. Now, if I was insulted by a nephew of mine, you know, I wouldn't particularly take it as a blessing. I'd be very upset. I probably wouldn't have the courage to leave the house. I'd try and get him out of the house, but then, you know, you can't do that when you have someone like Duryodhan. So you'd have to put up with it. You'd have to tolerate and really put up with all the nonsense that goes on. And of course, Vidura goes off on pilgrimage. He meets Uddhava and he asks him to describe the glories of Lord Sri Krishna. And the chapter, the first chapter has 45 verses. In the second chapter, Uddhava becomes ecstatic, describing Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Who wouldn't? He says, who is more merciful than Krishna? Who gave the demon Putana the position of his mother? Who would do that? Although she came to kill him, a mother who comes to kill him, and yet Krishna is so exceptionally merciful and treats her like a mother. So Vidura was quite, very happy in hearing that. So now in the third chapter, summarized that after leaving Vrindavan, Krishna marries thousands of queens. I mean, can you imagine the Lord doing that? It's quite unique. Beginning with naturally Rukmini, and by expanding himself, he simultaneously somehow lives with all 16,108 queens in Dwarka altogether. This third chapter has 28 verses. And the first three verses, 1, 2, 3, is really Kunsa is killed by Krishna and Balaram. Verses 4 to 7, Rukmini swept away by the Lord. 8 and 9 verses, Krishna marries the kidnapped princesses. From 10 to 13, Krishna exhibits the powers of his devotees. Interesting theme there. Text 14, the great burden of the earth abated. And then from 15 to 17, the Yadus quarrel among themselves. From 18 to 20, horse sacrifice performed by Maharaj Yudhisthira. And then 21 to 25, Krishna enjoys conjugal love. And then finally, from 26 to 28, so we're in this part, the Yadus visit places of pilgrimage. So these current verses are indicating the final pastimes of the Lord and the Yadus. And hence, to know more, we have to look at the 11th canto. I was just reading the verses of the 11th canto. And the first chapter gives us detail on the curse upon the Yadu dynasty, and hence this is what's been described. And the sixth chapter is all about the Yadu dynasty retires to Prabhas. So that's been kind of given. And indeed, Prabhus, the Yadus had become an absolute burden on the planet. That's kind of difficult for me to understand. How can the yadus become a burden? Prabhupada mentions that there are trillions and trillions upon trillions of yadus at the peak. And at one point, it's mentioned, Prabhupada mentions that 38.2 million teachers teaching the kids. I mean, that's more than half the population of the UK. That's just the teachers. So you can imagine, you know, how many there were. You know, it was 16,108 times 10, you know, 160,000 children, just sons. And then obviously there's daughters of the Lord. Each queen gives the Lord one daughter, the chief being Jarumati. Jarumati is married to Kritavarma. Kritavarma is always protected. Why? Because he's the son-in-law, he's the Jamai Raja. You don't do anything with the Jamai, the son-in-law. Rukmini instructs the Lord, when in battle, make sure he's protected. And hence he survives. You know, some 640 million entities come to an end. Some 5.76 million Kshatriyas come to an end. 11 survive, and Kritavarma is one of them. Because he's fully protected. Anyway, you know, here the description is given of the retirement, and the Lord has to make an arrangement. And if you can imagine, you know, how the heck is Krishna going to make an arrangement to get rid of all of them? Like, after 7 days of the curse, you know, they somehow are annihilated. And the Lord makes that arrangement. The Lord, of course, you know, he comes to Dwarka for the last time from Hastinapur. And he enters the palace of Rukmini. And generally, the Lord goes and sees Satyabhama. She's not the prince. I mean, she's queen number four, but, you know, he should really enter Rukmini's palace. But he's somewhat, every time he comes from his travels, he goes and sees Satyabhama first. Why? Because, you know, she's the one who's in control. Krishna is totally and utterly henpecked when it comes to her. She's the only personality who has that authority over the Lord. And hence in Chaitanya Leela, you know, she's none other than Jagannatham Pandit. And there's beautiful pastime there. But Krishna immediately comes to Rukmini's palace, and then he comes out. And he finds Lord Balaram. And he says to Lord Balaram that, listen, we have to leave. Lord Balaram says, well, what do you mean we have to leave? This description, incidentally, has been very nicely given in a book called Krishna Vijay. Vijay, Bengali. Compiled or written by Gunjaraj Khan in 1473, prior to the advent of the Lord, and it's written in somewhat simple Bengali language. And when Mahaprabhu, you know, got hold of it, he was very happy with it. He gave his approval, as it were. Gunjaraj Khan, somewhat of a contemporary of Mahaprabhu. And the Khan was quite delighted. And of course, it has been translated. And we do have it. We might have it in reception, not sure. We did have it a few months back, or I don't know, a couple of years back. But a nice description has been given of the departure of the Lord and the departure of the yadus. And the Lord persuades Balaram that we have to head towards Prabhas. The yadus have already gone. They've gone on a vacation. They've gone on a holiday. They've gone on a retreat. Yeah, our Keshav Maharaj likes to organize retreats, doesn't he? He's going one tomorrow, I believe, on the PS mentorship retreat. So they like to go on retreats. They like to go on vacation, holiday. They've all gone, so we have to go over there and to make sure that they behave themselves. So Balaram says, well, do we have to leave Dwarka? And what do you mean that we have to leave for good? Krishna says, yeah, it's time. It's time. We've been here too long. We have to wind things up. So he persuades them and persuades him. Rukmini Devi is fully aware. We know that from the introduction of the Chaitanya Mangal. And she's in tears, you know, because she knows that things are coming to an end. Regardless, the Lord leaves and he enters the province of Prabhas, and he then tells Lord Balaram that you now have to take samadhi. You have to enter the water. But however, do one thing. Just because of formalities, you know, expand yourself. Because one of you have to remain on the banks so that the funeral rites can be conducted. But then you can enter the water. So somewhat reluctantly explained, Balaram, Lord, he's in agreement. And from the water emerges a brilliantly white, and that's a nice white dhoti. Mine's pretty awful, it's not that white. Brilliantly white Anantashesh comes from the water and somehow cocoons the Lord. This kind of description is given. Cocoons the Lord. The Lord gets inside and then the Anantashesh then enters the water. And that's how Lord Balaram departs in accordance to Krishna Vijay, Gunjaraj Khan. And of course because the Lord expands and Krishna is just, Lord Krishna is witnessing all of this. He's there contemplating and is witnessing. He's the only one there. By this time, the Yadus have done their thing. They've had their little battle. Well, not little, somewhat, because there's so many of them. And of course, what occurs is that, you know, Shamba, 7 days prior, you all would know, 7 days prior, the boys are playing in jest, and you know, they disturb the sages. There's the iron ball. Shamba is dressed as a Maaji. And, you know, ask the sages, what's it going to be, a boy or a girl? The sages get upset, and hence the curse is there. Jai Shri Shri Radha Goklananda ki, Jai Shri Sisitarama Lakshman Hanuman ki, Jai Gonitai Bhagwan ki, Jai Jagat Guru Shri Prabhupada ki, Jai. And as a result, you know, when you've got someone like Durvasa Muni there, you don't mess around. You know, the dynasty is cursed and it's mentioned in 7 days, your dynasty will come to an end. And hence, in absolute fear, the boys run to Maharaj Ugrasena. Ugrasena instructs the blacksmiths, take the iron ball immediately and crush it. And of course they attempt to crush it, they make powder out of it. But the core of it, marble size, some unique alloy it was that they just couldn't crush it. The king himself, now this king, Ugrasena, has billions upon billions of servants. And yet he himself takes the ash, as it were, the powder stuff with the blinking marble. And he personally tosses it into the ocean because he's so worried. He just couldn't let anyone else do it. Everything else is done by others. You know, his nails are cut by others. His socks are put on by others. Of course, probably didn't have socks, but anyway. You know, his dhoti is put on by others. And yet, this particular type of task, he could not have anyone else doing this. Not even Krishna or Balaram. He himself goes and scatters the ashes, as it were. And of course, you know, what happens is naturally a fish swallows the marble. The ashes of this alloy, as it were, you know, it washes upon the shores of Prabhas. And along, you know, the beach, anyone been to the beach lately? I haven't. I mean, the best beach in the entire universe is in Jagannath Puri. Who's been to Jagannath Puri? Wow. Yeah, of course. Who hasn't been? Oh, you've got to go. You've got to swim in that ocean. The Lord did it 3 times a day, if not more. But anyway, the beach is there. And immediately, within no time, the ashes get swept up in, and then immediately, you know, from these ashes, as it were, iron rods come up, 8 foot tall, if not taller, and iron, you know, can you imagine, cast iron? I mean, of course, if that was available during World War II, and it was in Britain, let's say the beaches on Brighton, we would have won the war immediately. There wouldn't have been any issue of the Battle of Britain, because you've got so much iron, you could build tanks, you could build absolutely anything from aircrafts to, you know, ships. We have an aeronautical engineer over there. He could have built all these aircrafts and defeated everyone. And anyway, but if you could imagine, you know, 51 centuries ago, all these iron rods were there. And of course, you know, they all turned up there and they're all intoxicated. Kritavarma, Salba, main personalities there. Everyone then plucks out this rod, literally, you know, 8 feet, each 8 feet. And there's thousands upon thousands of them. A forest of them. And with that, you know, they have a wonderful battle. So all this has happened. And the Yadus lie there. They have left, but their bodies lie there. And Krishna is somewhat contemplating. Lord Balaram has entered the waters and in cocooned. His expansion, the body of is lying there in the banks. And then the Lord turns and he begins to walk. Just prior to that happening, Daruka appears. Daruka is the charioteer. And he appears and he's alarmed, actually. He comes off of his chariot and he says to the Lord, what's happening? It's like World War IV. What's going on? Forget World War III. This is what's going on. Is the world coming to an end? Is it, you know, annihilation time? And the Lord gives him brief instructions. Of course, you know, Daruka's position is truly, truly amazingly unique. What to speak of his position, but his son's position. His son is the charioteer of the son of Krishna, Prajumna. Daruka's grandson is the charioteer of Aniruddha's grandson, son of Prajumna. So it's the parampara, and so, you know, a unique position, and he's waiting for instruction. And the Lord says, look, go back to Dwarka. Bring back Arjuna. Daruka says, but my Lord, Arjuna is not in Dwarka, he's in Hastinapur. Why would he be in Dwarka? And the Lord says, no, by the time you get to Dwarka, Arjuna is going to be there. Bring him here because he has to perform the antim kriya, the funeral rites of all the Yadus. And the women can come. And so, of course, Daruka then pays his pranams for the final time. And he gets on his chariot and off he goes. He wanders off. And the Lord then truly mystically starts in a very casual manner walking. And of course he gets to a tree. He then begins to lie down on the tree, the branch. He has his hands like this, leans back, and he brings out his right leg with the left folded in. It's a very, you know, nice posture of the Lord, and you may see him now and again. And his right leg, he kind of dangles. And the leg then stops because, you know, it's inauspicious to dangle the leg. When we were children, you know, dangle, and parents would say, don't do that. It's not good. So the Lord then stops, but from a distance, Jara, the hunter, who has caught the fish, and this fish has naturally, you know, swallowed the marble, cuts the belly, gets this marble out. It's pure solid iron. Jara manages to, you know, he was quite ecstatic having this wonderful, you know, metal. And he shapes it. He must be a bit of a blacksmith. Shapes it like a, you know, spearhead, and puts this on his arrow. And with that arrow, he shoots, thinking that the Lord's right leg, as it were, is an ear of a deer. This is what's been explained, an ear of a deer. Of course, we know that that arrow then hits the right Achilles of the Lord. And hence, the right Achilles of a body is the weakest point of the body. You shoot the Achilles, the body will just collapse. So the Achilles is such an important, you know, tendon here. And so that's what happens, and the arrow goes through. Jara runs because he's thinking he's caught something really nice. Of course, he runs there and he sees it's the Lord. He's actually bewildered. He's just mesmerized. He pays his dandavats. He somewhat is a pure devotee at that point. And he says to the Lord, why me? Why am I being chosen for this? Why me? And the Lord then explains, like, hang on a second, don't worry about it, mate. There's a reason. And the Lord says, look, in my previous avatar, in Treta Yuga, I was Lord Ramchandra. And in order to, you know, have a duel with Bali, the Varana, it's appropriate etiquette. Actually, it's appropriate etiquette that if one wants to have a duel with another individual, then that individual has to, both of them actually have to seek the permission of the sun. So if someone wants to have a duel with me, hopefully not, because I'm not in any position to have any duel, they'll have to seek the permission of my sun. And if the sun grants permission, then the duel can take place. So similarly, the Lord went to Angada. Of course, Angada biologically is the son of Sugriv. Sugriv being the younger brother of Bali. And but because Angada was raised in one sense by Bali Raja, the Lord Ramchandra had to seek permission, Angad. And Angada said, my Lord, of course, please engage in this duel, because the duel will mean that my biological father will come back and take over. So hence the permission was given, the planning permission was granted somewhat, and of course the Lord Krishna mentions that, he says to Jara, that you, my friend, you were Angada. And back then, I'd mentioned to you that in our next encounter, in my next avatar, you would be the cause of me leaving. And hence, this is the reason why you're in the middle of this now. So, of course, Jara is quite surprised. He's, of course, happy as well, because soon enough, a Vimana appears from Vaikuntha. From the Viman, four Vishnududas come out, if you can imagine this, and they come to where Jara is. And you know, Jara is a hunter. He's got a hunter's body. Not particularly handsome. But they escort him up onto the Viman. Halfway getting on board, Jara's entire identity changes, because he's with the Vishnududas, and his entire body is somewhat transformed, and he has the four-armed Narayan form, and they enter, and the whole thing then, you know, closes, and off they go. So Jara is, and the Lord witnesses all of this, and his hands are back like this, and in a very relaxed mood. I'm not quite sure what kind of happens to the arrow, but then, you know, the description is given, then his transcendental body then, you know, is somewhat lifts, and he enters all the realms, the 14 planetary systems, and then, you know, everyone on those planetary systems, even in the nether regions, even in the subterranean regions, those who are fortunate take darshan of the Lord, and then the Lord then gradually goes, and he leaves, and that's the departure. And that description is truly nicely given, so well given in the Krishna Vichoy. Prabhus, I wanted to go on and on, but I got carried away. I thought to myself I would describe that very quickly. Of course, in the purport of verse 26, there is the mention of the Nitya Siddhas and the Sadhana Siddhas, and in accordance to the nectar of devotion, persons who have achieved eternal blissful life exactly on the level of Sri Krishna, and who are able to attract the Lord by their transcendental loving service, are called eternally perfect. The technical name is Nitya Siddha. So the description of both are given in the nectar of devotion. Nectar of devotion, exceptionally important to all of us. I only pick it up when I have to give class, which is a bit of a pity. But our manual, and so a lot can be said about that. But unfortunately, my time is coming to an end. I wanted to mention that, of course, the pilgrimage description has been given here towards the end of the purport, on the 26th purport. And pilgrimage, so much can be said, but to really to end with, you know, next week we have the appearance of Lord Advaita, and the week after, on the 21st, we have the appearance of Lord Nityananda. And so even coming here and being here, we are somewhat on holy ground. We're in pilgrimage, observing during that time, observing and being able to celebrate the appearance of the Lord. It's all part and parcel. Because I was just thinking to myself, I haven't been to Puri in 10 years. I'm dying to go, but you know, I got some solace when I read this purport. by Srila Prabhupada. But thank you so very much, Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Any corrections, comments, gladly accepted. Questions? Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you very much, Prabhu. I'm just wondering, in the verse 25, it describes that those who are incarnations of demigods went to Barbas, but the eternal devotees stayed in Dwarka. Do those who are eternal devotees versus those who are demigods, do they have some recognition that they are actually demigods? Or are they simply absorbed in the pastimes? How do they actually know who's who?
Yeah, you know, intriguing question indeed. One could only speculate. You know, there are indications which somewhat lead us to think that, yes, the identities are revealed and that they would know. And even so, due to the Lord's Jogamaya, because the Jogamaya is so very important, that energy of the Lord, and that Jogamaya covers the identities. For instance, you know, Maharani Satyabhama, her knowing that in Chaitanya Leela, she is Jagannatham Pandit. What to speak of the gopis, who she would be in Raj. Sometimes, you know, Vishakha, Lalita, all these are the gopis, and they appear again in New Dwarka. Mathura turns up in New Dwarka. So like that, it's, you know, sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not. It's immediately taken away as well, the Lord's Jogamaya. For instance, the parents of the Lord, they're the parents, but sometimes they're also not the parents. That relationship has been taken, and they see him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the Lord himself appeared, you know, Vasudev Devaki, immediately the Lord from the baby form, the Narayan form. So, oh, this is the God. This is the Lord. So the prayers are there. And these are the parents. But then, of course, the Lord goes back and he's a baby again, and hence they become parents again. So it's intriguing. Very intriguing. Unique. Very personal, I would say. Very personal. Thank you. Yes, Parma Karuna Prabhu.
Just wondering, these personalities go to Prabhas to offer respects to forefathers, engage in rituals. They also worship demigods. Practically, what does that mean for us? Devotees meant to do something when they go to holy places to respect the demigods or forefathers. That was my question. And also another practical question. Do we go to holy places? How regularly should we go? How important is it for us to go?
Yeah, such relevant questions. I have come across Prabhupada mentioning that, you know, every year or two we should go on pilgrimage because it would boost our batteries, as it were. So the more regular, the better. It's just practicality. So yes, you know, we need to experience yatras, and hence devotees do that. Yearly, bi-yearly, the more the better, in that sense. And what was the first one? Oh, yes, right, yeah. Well, you know, Gauranga Mahaprabhu, after the departure of Jagannath Mishra, goes to Gaya. and he performs the rituals. In every, you know, most of our kind of rituals are Bengali based because, you know, our founder Acharya is Bengali. The lineage is Bengali. So the tradition is there very much in Bengali custom. And of course, respects to the forefathers are there. Prabhupada was very, very careful of even not worshipping Mahadev, Lord Shiva. And just recently, I was listening to Shuddhidharma Prabhu in the car. I got this CD with all his... now that Prabhu has done something very nice for me, seldom he does, but he's given me a couple of CDs. It'll be very merciful. So I've got on one CD 41 lectures, and just the other day, he was saying that Prabhupada had come to with some disciples and devotees of his come to a temple of Lord Shiva, and of course, you know, Srila Prabhupada paid obeisance and somewhat worshipped. And when they came out, I can't remember which temple it was, because, you know, you're kind of driving and listening as well. But when they came out, the devotees asked him that, do we worship Lord Shiva? And of course, Srila Prabhupada said, he's Param Vaishnav. So, you know, if you worship, there's not going to be much harm as such. But his Prabhupada's response was, he's Param Vaishnav. I mean, I'd go to the extent of worshipping the lotus feet of all the devotees, worship. And of course, in the same lecture, Shruti Prabhu mentions that it's always good to be at the back of the temple room. And in the middle are the devotees, and over there is the Lord. So the devotees are your buffer. You don't really want to go right to the top. Have the devotees. Somewhat worship the devotees, because they're your buffer. This is what he was mentioning. And of course you have the Lord there. Of course, I was quite happy to hear that. That yes, you know, have the devotees in front. You know, look at the floor and meditate on their feet, as it were, during deity greetings or, you know, Mangal Arati. And of course, they're your buffer. And then you've got the lordships on the altar. So, I mean, if one were to do that, is that worship? Is it respect? When I was a wee young bhakta, which I still am, we were instructed that every day you must pay obeisance to at least three times to a devotee. And on one occasion, I didn't pay my obeisance to a sannyasi. Well, I did actually, but he didn't see that. And I was truly reprimanded. I was trying to tell him that, Maharaj, I paid obeisance, but it was at a distance when I saw you. Again, you know, coming back to, sorry, I don't want to cut off on a tangent. Coming back, in the ritualistic aspect of life is there, whether it's the spiritual life, whether we lead the, you know, the so-called mundane life, but the duties are there. The gopis themselves, they somewhat worship, you know, Maharani Katyayani. And why do they worship? Because they want the Lord as their husband. So those, why does, you know, Jyotila allow Srimati Radharani to go to the banks of the Jamuna and worship Surya Narayan, the sun god, because that's protection for her lineage, her family, her, you know, forefathers, etc. So she allows Srimati Radharani to do that because that's custom. That's tradition, that's culture. That's very much there. But having said all of that, especially to the neophyte devotees, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Gauranga Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Lord, worshipable. Lord Nityananda is Balaram Nityananda. These are the Supreme Personalities of Godhead. And they are worshipable. Full stop. Of course, I would like to worship Lord Shiva. I wish I was a devotee of Lord Shiva. A few moons back, giving class here on Shivratri Day, and I had such a wonderful time. Mother Kalanganath, after the class, during the class, I can't remember, she says to me, were you a devotee of Lord Shiva before you came to ISKCON? And my response was, well, Mum, I wish I was, Mum, but I wasn't, unfortunately. But, you know, anyway, thank you so much, Prabhu. Your breakfast getting somewhat cold. We're almost 9:15. Granth Raj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.